It's not gonna. These next 2 years are gonna be pretty rough. It's gonna be a lot of speed bumps, rough sledding ahead. However, I believe that the American people ultimately will come to their senses, and in 2 years, give back the House and the Senate to the Dems, and then we'll see what happens. It's hard to say. It's day by day now. Nobody can really predict the extent of damage that this guy's going to do. He says a lot of things. Like, for example, when he was first president, he talked about building a wall and making Mexico pay for it. None of that happened. He talked about a lot of things that never materialized. He's a big talker. He's a carnival barker. He's a demagogue. So probably two-thirds of what he says won't materialize. It's that last one-third that might materialize. So we're vigilant. We're concerned. To not be concerned would be naive. Yeah, we have to keep an eye on this guy.
And he's an instigator. Mm-hmm. He has a following, mm-hmm. and many of them are armed, mm-hmm. and extremely right-wing. He's going to pardon all those January 6th insurrectionists who, may well start to organize themselves into militias. And he'd probably consider that to be, worthy of love.
I'm not sure that's going to happen now. Had he lost, that would have been the fear that he would have organized, because he claimed that he won the last election when, in fact, he lost the last election. But he perpetrated that lie that the Dems stole the election or rigged the election, and that's what caused the January 6th, 2021 uprising attempt to overthrow the government. It was an attempted coup on the Capitol, basically. That's when he lost. This time he won, so I'm not sure he's going to organize his militias to, who knows? There's really no reason for him to do that. He won.
But he's going to be pursuing a policy of a path of vengeance against the deep state, against the enemy within. And it's very frightening to think about, his political opponents and members of the media who are, the fake media.
Mm-hmm. That he called, yeah. Actually, several Americans are
enemies of the people.
Enemies
I couldn't
of the
believe
people.
That when he was referred to back mm-hmm. in his first presidency.
Isn't that the title of an Ibsen play, by the way?
Yeah, enemies of the people. Well, it's something out of Stalin, or Stalinist Russia, or Nazi Germany.
Yeah,
a lot of people are baffled that the American public could vote for somebody like 75 or 77 million. How many?
He got 75 million, she got 72 million. He beat her by 3 million.
But so how 75 million Americans could vote for an individual of such manifestly abysmal character?
Mm-hmm. Debauch, the guy's debauch.
And he's rude, he's vulgar, he's bombastic.
Cheats on his wife, slept an adult film star, Stormy Daniels.
How could 75 million Americans vote for somebody like that?
America is undereducated and misinformed and miseducated. And the interesting thing, after the election, when he won, all the pundits on TV, all the mainstream media, they were crowing, half of America voted for him, half of America voted for Trump. Well, actually, if you look at the numbers, as you said, 75 million voted for him. But 75 million divided into 340 million Americans is 22%. 78% of America did not vote for him. 78%. Now, 22% voted for him. 21% voted for Kamala. That was pretty close. But 78% of Americans said no, but they didn't vote for Trump. So this myth that half the country, that's balderdash.
Gazing on the situation in Gaza and this state of affairs that Israel and, as I call it, Israel-USA, I call it the United States, Israel-USA, or perhaps the two of them together, Israel and the United States, they really are, I see them as kind of like conjoined twins. Mm. The United States is not an ally or a good friend or a very good friend of Israel. It isn't simply passionately attached to Israel. I see the two as kind of conjoined.
Mm-hmm.
And acting together as a mm-hmm. in tandem, and to see what Israel-USA has done to Gaza, completely annihilating it.
It's gone.
And this has all been done in to put it mildly, flagrant violation of international law.
Indeed.
Like Israel and the United States have shown to the world that international law is just an empty shell.
Mm-hmm.
International law has no mm-hmm. has no meaning.
Mm. Yeah.
I find that, you know, in a world where there is no law, I mean, there is law, but anyone who's powerful mm-hmm. enough to violate it can do so with complete impunity.
I think
I find that very frightening.
I think what the U.S. saw in Israel for decades is they kept saying it's the only democracy in the Middle East, number one, but they also saw Israel in arming Israel to the teeth and budgeting Israel ever since, what were the accords where Egypt and Israel each got the Camp David Accords, I think? Yeah. So I think what each side gets $4 billion a year or something like that to keep them from killing each other. But I think the U.S. saw Israel as a client nation, a proxy, kind of like the cop on the beat to kind of keep control of the Middle East, of our oil. Here I said the Saudi oil, basically. So I think that was Israel's function for all these decades, kind of keep an eye on our oil in Saudi Arabia, basically.
A very, very deep psycho-political, psycho-cultural bond between Israel and the United States.
Mm.
It's like the oldest and the youngest settler colonial state,
mm-hmm.
the oldest and the youngest European settler colonial state, the United States and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And they identify with each other.
And
the United States certainly identifies with Israel.
Mm-hmm. Also, a lot of Jews live in the U.S., and so there's a direct connection there.
Yeah, but I think that the presence of the Christian Zionists are a far more mm. powerful force when it comes to, and they're far more numerous than the Jews mm. in supporting Israel.
Mm.
And the Jews in the United States, I think, are divided. But the Christian Zionists are wholly Mm. on Israel's side.
Mm-hmm. And they don't give a crap about the Jews. They're just thinking of the end times, and that in order for Christ to make his return to earth, the mount, the Temple Mount, has to be rebuilt, right? And the Jews have to either convert to Christianity or too bad for you. that's in the last book in the Old Testament, right?
But in a world where anybody who's powerful enough can do whatever they want mm. with complete impunity, and international law becomes completely meaningless,
mm-hmm.
just hollowed out,
mm-hmm. especially the United Nations.
It's frightening because we face enormous challenges on mm. planet Earth. No challenge greater than protecting ourselves, defending ourselves from climate catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
But in the absence of the rule of law,
mm-hmm.
there's no law for planet Earth, and there's no mm-hmm. law, no law in human affairs.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary.
Mm-hmm.
Am I overstating the crisis?
No, not at all. Unfortunately, it's too accurate, actually.
And maybe perhaps it's always been like this.
I think in the past there have been times of more cooperation, international cooperation, but today it's kind of every country for themselves, really. It's a state of anarchy. And I think what's happened is the U.S. had always been the North Star for the democracies of the world, especially Western Europe. And now, of course, after Trump has destroyed our alliances, he's denigrating not just life here in the U.S., but our relations abroad. So, yeah, it's a perilous time, no question about it, when we need international cooperation, unlike any other time, to manage the environment, to reduce carbon emissions, to agree to green accords. The Paris Accords, which really were negligible in terms of their impact, even those, Trump pulled out of those. There's never been a greater time for international cooperation. But we look at the leadership of the world today.
And the rule of law.
And the rule of law, exactly. And it's non-existent. We're heading towards a type of, as immigration has flooded immigrants from Syria, for example, 5 million immigrants from Syria flooded Europe. That caused a huge backlash. Look at Orban in Hungary. He built a fence around Hungary, whereas Merkel... Merkel in Germany, a conservative, said you're welcome to come to Germany. It was really interesting, kind of a reversal there. But the issue of migration, immigration, I'm afraid that it's causing hyper-patriotism, nationalism, And, you know, leading us towards another revisit of what happened in the 30s in Germany. No question about it. In America, people associate the word fascism with those old grainy black and white, you know, archival images of Nazis and information with the swastikas, you know, and the jackboots. That's what they think fascism, or they see Mussolini with the black shirts, Hitler with the brown shirts. That's not how it's going to appear. It's already appearing. Vestiges going after the courts, going after the independent press, the free press, saying that the press is the enemy of the people, going after the court, attacking the judiciary. When he was president, he stacked the judiciary with his judges, and then he did that to the Supreme Court. So we're stuck. We're at an impasse in this country. It's pretty serious. It's the 11th hour in the U.S. as far as democracy. Democracy's hanging by a thread here. I never thought I'd say it. I'm 75 years old. Never did I think I would ever hear myself say that in America, democracy, the bastion of democracy, the North Star for the rest of the world, the beacon of light that everybody wants to come and be part of this country. No mas. That's ending. People are now recognizing America ain't what it used to be, and democracy is being threatened in this country, and it's not in the dead of night when nobody's watching. In 2016, when Trump beat Hillary Clinton, I kind of give those people a pass who voted for him, because many of them are ignorant. They really didn't know who this guy was. But here we are, 9 years later, everybody knows exactly who he is, and he got more votes this time. That's very concerning. Not even concerning. I'm freaking out, actually. Many of our friends are freaking out. But we'll get over it, and we'll meet the challenge, and history goes on, and the progressive movement does not die. It does not die here. After we lick our wounds and organize, we are going to fight this, and we are going to prevail, and we're going to push this country back into a progressive direction. There's no one that's it, it. It's going to happen. There's many, many, many more of us than there are of them. What they do own right now, they own the government, but they own this right-wing media echo chamber with Fox News, talk radio. 90% of talk radio in America is hate radio. 90%. And that's been going on for decades. And so for decades, the rubes out there, the people without college education, you know, the people who voted for this guy, they've been marinated in hate speech. And then now you have social media, you have Joe Rogan, you've got Twitter X, which is, you know, helping this minority of haters, the gun owners, the Trump supporters, they're benefiting from this amazing echo chamber, media echo chamber, and the left has not yet caught up. We're kind of still trying to catch up with how they've done it. They're amazingly successful getting people to vote for this guy again, given his record. That's astounding. We're very concerned here.
But you're going to turn it around.
Oh, there's no question. You know, did the people fighting slavery, the abolitionists, did they give up? No. Did they have really bad days and setbacks? You bet. But they kept going. Did the suffragettes pushing for women to vote? Finally, they got the 19th Amendment in 1920. Did they give up? Hell no. The people pushing for the civil rights movement, did they give up? Hell no. They got Johnson to sign the Civil Rights and the Voting Rights Acts in the 60s. Did the anti-Vietnam War movement quit? No. It led probably to ending the war more earlier than it would have ended. And then today we have women fighting for autonomy over their body. And then we have the rest of us still fighting the leftovers of neoliberalism. This really destructive economic philosophy started with Reagan, so-called trickle-down supply-side economics, which has destroyed the planet. It's created the hugest gap between rich and poor. It's created these horrible billionaires, the Elon Musks of the world and the Peter Thiels of the world, who are purchasing our democracy, basically. So, yeah, we have a lot of work to do. But history isn't over. And we're part of a very proud movement that began with the abolitionists in this country. And now, not everybody is going to, become involved and become active. Many people are depressed and they're going to give up and become complacent. That's okay. History tells us most of populations weren't the shakers and the movers. It was always a few people. As Margaret Mead once said, one of my former teachers, she said, never doubt that a small group of committed people can change the world. She said, indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. And I do believe that.
Glenn Alkaly, thank you so much for joining me on the Green Planet Monitor.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much, David.
Glenn Alkaly is Associate Professor of Anthropology at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, City University of New York. We'll link to Glenn's writings at greenplanetmonitor.net. That's it for today's GPM, a listener-supported podcast coming to you from Earth Chronicle Productions in the Netherlands. Listen to, read, and watch more Earth stories at greenplanetmonitor.net. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube, and our home base, Blueberry. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, and Canada's Harbinger Media Network. While you're visiting the site, help us make the GPM happen. Subscribe and or donate. GreenPlanetMonitor.net. By the way, I've said it before, I'll say it again. The guy behind this guitar is Dan Weisenberger. Thanks for your great instrumental themes, Dan. I'm David Kattenberg. Over and out for now.
My name is Jamie Hill. I'm the Design and Communications Manager at Embark Sustainability. I think my favorite thing about Embark is that you do not have to be the climate know-it-all. You don't have to know everything about the issues that are going on. You really just need the passion to get started. So depending on what you're interested in, you might have a unique skill or interest that you don't think is applicable to climate at all, and it turns out you are the people that we need to be part of the community. So I'd really encourage anybody who has even an inkling of interest in climate or food justice to get on board. Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at EmbarkSustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at EmbarkSustain.
Hey, this is Thurston. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby. Yeah, keep listening.
Radio Rewind.